This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
I want to look at this evening with you at the highest form of civilization. We discussed last week and the week before how Yirat Shamayim, fear of God, is that which guarantees the beginnings of religious development. At least some form of moving off the ground, the very basis, the very primitive level of religious development is triggered off by Yirat Shamayim. But what does the Torah really call a civilized person? Being civilized and being religious don't necessarily go hand in hand. Certainly, in the normal sense of the word religious. One can find uncivilized people who are religious, and I suppose one can find civilized people who are not religious. Chazon Ish, the second perek of his Emunah V'Tochen, describes an uncivilized religious person. Now I want to learn through this paragraph of Chazon Ish with you. Uma she'anu ro'im b'chayim, and what we see in life is Reuven Ish Musori. Reuven, who is an ethical person. The Zimras Habitochim Al Dals Fosov Tomid. And the tune of Bitochen is on his lips always. Always talks about the importance of Bitochen and the value of Bitochen. Always talks about it. He talks badly about overexerting oneself in the area of trying to earn one's own living through one's own efforts. All min hashamayim. Umetayev es harudifu achar parnosa. And he despises those who spend their lives pursuing parnosa. V'omnam hu ish matzliach. However, our friend Reuven is quite a successful person in his own rights. U'v'chanusoy lo yechsa loy lekuchos. And in his little shop killer in Bnei Brak there, he's not short of customers. People are lining up from morning till night. The shop is full of people, Kainan Hora. And Baruch Hashem, things are going well with him. Ve'inenu zokuk l'rav hishtadlus. And he's fortunate, he doesn't need much effort. He goes into his shop in the morning, he makes sure that everything's alright, and he leaves the shop assistant there, and he goes across the street to the yeshiva, and he sits and he learns. And he talks about bitochen and hishtadlus, and so it goes. Omnam ohevu es habitochen. It is true that he does love bitochen. Ki haloi gam habitochen mare loi ponim soichakos. Because after all, bitochen has shown him a smiling face, says the Chazon Ish. He can afford to love bitochen. Vihine nifte'enu pitoim. And all of a sudden, he is surprised to discover, liroes es Reuven habiteach, all of a sudden we are surprised to see this Reuven, the trusting one, the Boteach, mislachesh im na'arov anshe atzase. Busy meetings and talking and more meetings and whispering and meeting in the back corner of the Beis HaMedrash and talking on the way out of the Beis HaMedrash. What's going on in Reuven's life? What they're talking about? Eich lahafer atzas re'ehu. How to undo the plan of their friend, his friend, ha'oimer liftach hanus kemusoi, who's planning to open a similar shop in the same area. V'hu malei otzev mizeh, and he's in depression because of this, Reuven is. U'v'heyoiz tchilosu rak b'chiboyin libo, and although originally his feelings of antagonism towards his friend were buried deep in his heart, u'mizbayesh legalos hadover, and he was embarrassed to reveal to others that in fact these were his feelings, pen yeyeh lecherpo b'enei makirov, lest it be a disgrace, he be a disgrace to his friends. But eventually, hoylechu ma'abed gam midas habusho b'seifo. At the end, as things go on, he even loses this midah of shame. U'matchil b'hishtadluyos g'luyos, And he starts with open efforts, lahani machshavas re'ehu, to push aside the plans of his friend. Ula'at la'at chilech u'miskadim b'derech hakalosin, and little by little he continues to develop along the path of degeneracy, crookedness. U'midat habusho tomes tahalech mikerev levovoy, and the characteristic of busha, of shame, conscience, melts and is drawn right out of his heart. And he now openly does despicable actions, and disgusting actions, activities, open to everybody. And the competition between he and his friend mitparsemet tachlis hapirsum becomes extremely well known, and it becomes the talk of the day. Everybody's talking about these two fighting their way through the business. And he makes up reasons and justifications which are based on lies, kedei lahatzpik es ma'asov, to justify his actions. And he continues to add perushim and explanations to his justifications. That whatever he's doing is l'shem shemayim. Chas v'sholem, he wouldn't be doing if it wasn't right. And that's what he has to be doing. And it's all quite ethical. And he disillusions himself to believe thus. And he also causes those who are not quite so bright among his friends to believe him, or those who love arguments. There are two kinds of people who go along with this, but it's the Shem Shemayim: the unintelligent and the mischievous. An intelligent, normal human being will see right through it. This is not the Shem Shemayim, forget it, this is a lot of nonsense. But the unintelligent or the mischievous will thrive on this. And usually they gather around him those who pursue argument, those who enjoy a good argument, and those who love a little bit of Lashon Hara. And the Sotan makes all these different people who love arguments get on extremely well under the circumstances. And they build a lasting structure of machlokes and argument. Lashon Hara, there's a lot of Lashon Hora, Rechilus, Sheker, lies, Tinas Chinom, unjustified hatred, Ma'ariche Yomim V'Shonim, that carry on for days and for years. Ve'eino min ha'nimno, and it is not impossible, L'hipagesh b'goyer al hara hazeh, to encounter this unfortunate episode, Gam be'esek ruchani l'gamri, also in matters of the pure spirit. You won't find this only in the business world. It is not impossible to find such a thing also in spiritual matters, in certain circumstances of the mikrim or polim, and in certain situations, the whole sidre machlokes misnagin gam etzlom b'mishtar hanog davar davar aloifnei, and all the methods of machlokes take place all by the accepted disciplinary system, each one in its own way. Different types of machlokes, but they all follow the same sort of predictable pattern. There you've got an example of an uncivilized religious person, where all of a sudden his religious barriers disappear, and he finds himself doing things which he would never believed himself capable of a couple of years earlier. What's happened? He's under pressure. How should he behave? Miteva habiteach, says the Chazon Ish, it is the nature of one who has bitochem, trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, be'emes, in truth, b'hatznei leches. The first thing you'll find with a person who has bitochem is he doesn't talk about it. If a person talks about his bitochem, then you can already start suspecting. V'lo yishma mipiv ki hu min habitchem, you will not hear from his mouth that he's one of the ones who trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And also in his heart, he feels upset at his inadequate bitochen. Umiut shleimusoy bezeh, and the inadequacy of his perfection in this area. V'rak lemaise t'lave imoy bitochen va'otzma bo yizborach. But when it becomes a matter of practice, there you'll see a tremendous storehouse of bitochen. Lo yechas im re'ehu poseach chanus. He doesn't bother. It doesn't bother him if his friend's opening a shop. In fact, he'll walk across the road and ask his friend if there's anything he can do to assist. The takno beitatoivo, to give him some good advice. Who are the good customers? Who are the bad customers? Whose credit rating is good? Who he should keep away from? Lasso isavuro, to help him, to advise him how to advertise, how to present his product. The lishko da takanosoi, and to lishko means to involve himself in the improvement of his friend, to apply his mind to his friend's business. After all, there is nobody more experienced and therefore qualified to advise the friend than he himself. If a person goes into a new business, the most experienced people are his competitors, and therefore they are the ones who hold the key to good advice for him. And how much kedusha is added to the world? Liros ish oise chesed im hamisated lizcharesimre. To see a man doing kindness to one who establishes himself in competition. Meisif tehilo lireo vizborach, and it adds praise to those who fear the Ribbono shel Olam. Ashrov ashre doiroi. Happy is such a man, and happy is the generation in which such a man lives. V'yitoroin oir min hachushech. And more than the difference between light over darkness, Yitorin Hoemes Minasheke, is the difference between truth and falsehood. The Yitorin Bitochen Amisi, the Bitochen Mezuyov. And the preference for true Bitochen over false Bitochen. So already we have in the Chazon Ish the concept of true Bitochen and false Bitochen. False bitochen is the man who talks a lot, but when it comes to the bitochen being tested in a very trying situation, his bitochen totally collapses. True bitochen is a man who very seldom talks about it, if ever. And when it's tested, he operates in accordance with that bitochen. That's civilization. That's the opposite of the law of the jungle. The law of the jungle is the survival of the fittest. And Darwin thinks that that's the law of humanity too. It is not the law of humanity. With humanity, it's a different thing altogether. It's survival of the most moral. It's survival of the most civilized. We've seen many very fit nations that have ceased to survive, that have ceased to exist. One has seen many powerful organizations that have ceased to exist. But when something is established, Ataras HaKodesh, when something is established with kedusha, with holiness, and with what the Torah regards as civilization, that's something which outlasts anything else. It doesn't disappear. How does one achieve such civilization? How does one get to such a level where an individual is prepared to assist somebody whose success means his own downfall? That's really what it is. It means going out of one's way to perform chesed, not where the chesed is cheap, where it doesn't cost me much. That's easy. But to perform chesed where it's against my interests. How does one do that? That's not normal. That's superhuman. That's not something which one intuitively knows how to do. That's something which has to be developed in the individual. There is a saying that we say that Chazal said, Chesed l'umim chatos. It's a posuk. The chesed of nations, different views, does that mean all the goyim, or does that mean when the goyim function as nations in their political capacity? Chesed l'umim, the kindness, the chesed of nations, chatos, is sinful. What does that mean? It is very difficult to distinguish chesed from expedience. When is a person operating for true chesed, for true kindness, and when does that chesed have with it a basic motivation of expedience. Because there's no question, kindness pays. When you're good to somebody, it helps. He's good to you some other time, you get a name of being good to be. But it certainly does one good, certainly doesn't do one any harm. And when we say chesed l'umim chatos, that means that the primary motivation of chesed among the nations is one of expedience, not one of chesed. It's a very strange medrash in Shmos, in the first parsha, about the miyaldos, Shifra and Pua, the two midwives who were instructed by Paroi to kill all the boys that were born, and they refused to do so. Says the medrash, Koshtu atzman lemaise ziknan. They decorated themselves with the actions of their grandfather. Ze Avron. This is Avron Avin. K'moisha Kodesh Baruch Hu meyid alav, as the Ribbono Shel Olam gives evidence on him. Ki ato yodati ki yore Elokim ata. Now I know that you are a yore Shemayim, that you fear God. And the meyaldos, these midwives, are also referred to as Yirei Hashem. Atireno ha-meyaldos es ha-elokim, and the meyaldos, the midwives, feared the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Medrash joins the two together and says they're following in the footsteps of their grandfather. Avraham Avinu was referred to by the Ribbono Shel Olam as a Yore Elokim, and so are they. Omru, they said, Avraham Avinu Olav HaSholom. Our grandfather Avraham Avinu, Posach Loi Pundak, he opened an inn. V'hoyozanes ha'ivrim v'sashovim b'nei odom ha'relim. And he used to give food and shelter to the people, the travelers that used to come and go. The non-Jews, these were very uncivilized people, in fact, that lived around that area at that particular time. The bottom of the barrel, idol worshippers and complete agnostics. Avraham Avinu opens a hotel for them. And we, not only don't we have to feed these children, that's not what we're being asked to do, we're simply being asked not to kill them. We're going to keep them alive. Avraham Avinu, who used to feed people that he didn't have a responsibility to, that cost him something. We're not even being asked to feed these children, just to keep them alive, not to kill them. That we have to do. We have to follow in the footsteps of our father Avraham. Their comparison is a little bit difficult to understand. It's true that Avraham had to feed, whereas they, not being asked to feed, they're only being asked not to kill. Except Avraham, what it cost him to feed was money. What it's going to cost these women not to kill the babies is their own lives. What's the comparison? And secondly, what is this phrase of relating them to Avraham Avinu, about whom the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Ato yodati ki yore Elokim ata"? I now know that you're a God-fearing man. That God-fearing test, that state, that situation where the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Now I know that you're a yore Elokim." When was that? That wasn't when he fed the angels that came past. That's when he was about to sacrifice his son. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, "Now I know that you fear God." What's that got to do with his act of chesed? It's a different thing. But the two are very closely connected, we see. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Avraham, all these years that you've fought on my behalf, that you've opened an inn, and with great and serious nefesh you've fed people and sheltered people and been kind to people, that you argued on behalf of Sodom, that you saved your cousin Lot, your nephew Lot, all the things that you've done throughout the years, I don't know that you're a Yirei Shemayim. We now begin to get an idea of the other extreme of Yirei Shemayim. Over the last 2 weeks we've been talking about Yirei Shemayim as being the bottom level, the very first step in one's climb in Yiddishkeit. And here we have an Avraham Avinu, after years and years of sacrifice for the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Rebbeinu says only after he was about to sacrifice his own son, "Ato yodati, now I know that you fear the Rebbeinu Shalom." What about up till now? Up till now you didn't know. Answer is no. It's possible that Avraham Avinu could have done everything he did up till that point without Yirei Shemayim. Why then? Expedience. It's feasible. He was building a name for himself. He could have been building a cult. the Avraham Avinu cult followers. He establishes certain norms for the cult. There's a bris between them. They've got to go through some form of bodily mutilation, which is not an unknown practice for cultists to perform. Who says it's Meshem Shemayim? Who says it's a Yoresh Shemayim? Says the Ribbono Shel, now that you're prepared to kill your son for me, I know that everything you've done up till now has been because of Yoresh Shemayim and not because of self-interest. Avram's most outstanding middah was chesed, was kindness. That's what he developed and contributed to the world more than anything else. There is a form of chesed which one has naturally. That's the kindness that a parent shows to a child. Even an animal has that. You don't have to be human or superhuman to be kind to one's own children. That's a natural intuition with which one is given from birth. The Ribbono Shel Olam has to test whether Avraham Avinu can overcome that natural chesed and act against it, because that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. If he can't, then that means that everything he's been doing now up till now has been expedient. It's been because that's the way he's felt like doing it. That's what he wants to do. It's all very well wanting to do chesed, to do mitzvahs. But what happens when there's a conflict in one's will? There's a big difference between doing what one wants and wanting to do what one does. Doing what one wants, I decide. I do what I feel like doing. Wanting to do what one does, I first define what has to be done, and then I want that. And the distinction can only be tested in the most extreme circumstances. Individually, we must all want to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. We mustn't be doing it by force or some heavy burden that lies over our head. So how do we know if we're doing what we want or we're wanting what we do? How do we know which it is? The answer is only if Chas V'Shalom we're called upon to do something which goes right against our nature. Bring your son as a sacrifice. Ribbono Shel Olam, this is my only son. If he goes, everything's finished. And we've been talking about a future of millennia. We've been talking about coming to Israel. We've been talking about having children more than the stars of the heaven and the sand of the earth. We've been talking about teaching the whole world monotheism. We've been talking about teaching the whole world chesed. I'm an old man, I don't have much longer to go. And my one and only son you want me to kill? What kind of chesed is that? No, Avram doesn't ask. It's as natural for him to kill his son as it was to do the chesed. Makes no difference. This is the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What he wants, I do. That being the case, his chesed is raised to a different level. The difference between wanting what we do and doing what we want expresses itself perhaps more than anywhere else in the area of chesed. Because people want to be kind. People are nasty by nature. And when being kind, people are often doing what they want. But what happens when the cost of that chesed is extremely high? That's the test as to whether we're doing what we want or we want what we're doing. If the cost is extremely high and we're able to do the chesed with the same simcha, with the same joy as we are when the chesed is cheap, that means we're wanting what we do. We have to do it and we love doing it. But if at that point we withdraw a little bit from it, and we do the chesed with a long face, and we skimp on this wherever we can, or we don't do it altogether, that means we're not doing what we want. That means we're not wanting what we do. We're doing what we want, and we don't want to do this. And so we withdraw from it. The chesed of Avraham Avinu, this little inn of his, which he had at the crossroads, the beginning of Vayera, on the hottest of hot days, a day that was abnormally hot, a day that was miraculously hot, that was so hot that no human being would venture out. A special chesed from the Ribbono Shel Olam, that nobody should trouble Avraham Avinu, because he's 3 days after his bris milah. He's an old man, he's had a bris, had an operation, and he's in extreme pain and discomfort at that point. Ribbono Shel Olam brings this hot day, and Avraham is getting aggravated. What chesed is there? All I'm doing is sitting here being occupied in my own pain. What can I do? It's chesed. There's nobody around. Nobody's traveling today. And he sits outside in the heat to keep his eye open for people. Eventually he sees three Arabs far away. What does he do? This old man, 3 days after an operation, on the hottest day of history, he runs to them. He runs to them to persuade them, please, to come in. And despite all their efforts to avoid it, he manages to convince them that that's what he wants. One would think when they came in, an old man on the hottest day of the year, hottest day of the history of humanity, having just suffered an operation which is causing him great discomfort and pain, would be entitled to ask his young boy and his servants to prepare the meal. No. Avraham Avinu does it all himself. He wants to be occupied in chesed constantly without a stop, to the maximum of his ability. That, say the Mialdus, Shifra and Pur. Here we see a man who's prepared to put his life on the line for chesed. This is not expedience. This is not a person who's doing chesed because he wants to do chesed. This is a person who wants to do chesed because that's what has to be done. And he does it with all his heart and with all his might, to the point of Mesiras Nefesh, to the point of giving his life, because there is no life that's worthwhile without chesed. A life without kindness, a life without generosity, is not a human life, it's not a civilized life. And we find Avraham Avinu doing that which is in his greatest disinterest, something which could cause him, chas v'sholom, to become terribly ill and possibly even to die. Doesn't matter. Chesed has to be done. And that chesed is the chesed which is intertwined with Yiras Shamayim. Atzo Yodati, later on when he brings his son as a sacrifice, or is about to do so, now I know that you're a Yiras Shamayim. And now I have the chesed which you did is classified as Yiras Shamayim. Why? Yiras Shamayim, we said, in its most basic and primitive form, is very simply the fear of God. Plain and simple fear. I'm scared of him. What am I scared of? I'm scared that he will punish me if I do wrong. I'm scared that if I don't do right, I will miss reward. Yiras Shamayim is the belief, the knowledge, the vision that the Ribbono Shel responds. That he punishes for actions which are wrong and that he rewards for actions which are right. That's Yiras Shamayim. We mentioned 2 weeks ago the danger that Yiras Shamayim can lead one to complete impotence and inactivity. One can be completely paralyzed with fear. One knows what it is. Sometimes a person finds himself in a situation of deep shock and fear and he can't move. You have situations where an individual is confronted with a poisonous snake and he can't run away. He's becomes paralyzed. He stands there, which is perhaps the safest thing for him to do. But in the case of Yiras Shamayim, it isn't. To be paralyzed by the fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam would be a terrible tragedy. How does this operate? That on the one hand we're meant to cultivate plain and simple primitive fear, and on the other hand that's meant to lead us to exalted heights and not to make of us oppressed and depressed individuals. You see, Yiras Hashem is not only the fear that God punishes, it is also the knowledge that only God punishes. Yiras Shamayim is not only the fear resulting from the fact that God rewards. That also is a cause for fear, because one realizes there is no reward without the good deed. And one realizes a good deed missed is reward missed, it's opportunity missed, it's olam haba missed, it can never be made up again. As we said previously, a bad deed, a loitase, an aveiro, it's a terrible thing to do, but one can do tshuva, one can repent for it, and one can avoid the punishment. But a mitzvah which was missed, that you can never do tshuva for. You can never regain the opportunity. The opportunity is gone. And so a Yoreh Shemayim is even more worried about his missed opportunities than he is about the mistakes he's made. The mistakes he's made are serious and severe, and he tries to repair them. But the missed opportunities are beyond repair. But then Yiras Shamayim is not the knowledge only that God rewards. Yiras Shamayim is the knowledge that only God rewards. If one has that Yiras Shamayim, that only God punishes and that only God rewards, then one finds that fear of God is fearlessness of man. And that's the middle that has to be achieved. We're sitting here being terrified by this ominous concept of fear of God. What it is really is a complete and utter liberation from fear of everything else. Because a human being has to be scared of something. We're too small and vulnerable to be fearless. The only question is, what are we going to choose to fear? A lot of studies have been made about the strange phenomena that was first discovered with Patty Hearst, you'll remember, of a kidnapped person, a captor, falling in love with her captive, a captive falling in love with her captor, which was something that at the time people found very weird and difficult to understand. It's natural. The one who one fears is the one in whose security one finds oneself. Somebody who you don't find security in, you don't fear. What is one scared of? One's scared of lack of security. One's scared that the thing I'm leaning on might disappear tomorrow. That's what causes fear. And therefore, that which one fears is that which one believes in and trusts in. And that belief and trust becomes loyalty and ultimately love. And one can understand already, one can get insights to these things that we'll have to discuss much later on, of how Yiro eventually develops into Ahava, how fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam eventually develops into love of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We mentioned several weeks ago the Perush on the Rambam and others that Ahava cannot be achieved without Yiro, and that the higher forms of Yiro, standing in awe of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is also Yiro Shamayim, awe of the Ribbono Shel Olam also cannot be achieved without being preceded by simple, plain, primitive fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But this plain and simple fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam is in itself a liberation from fear of everything else. Fear of God is the belief not only that God punishes and rewards, but it is the belief that only God punishes and rewards. Fear of God is fearlessness of man. Once one understands that, one understands first of all another one. He's ill, he's sick, it's hot. What brings a person to completely ignore his own physical situation and throw himself into a mitzvah chesed? Fearlessness. Fear of God, the fearlessness of everything else. We're sometimes scared of ourselves, which is the most terrifying form of fear altogether. We're scared we're overtired, we're scared we're overdoing it, we're scared we're going to catch a cold. And this fear of ourselves is sometimes the most paralyzing of all forms of fear. We're scared of our wives, we're scared of our husbands, scared of our husbands is right, but scared of our wives. Scared of our children, which is perhaps the most tragic and pathetic of all fears, to see a father frozen in fear, unable to say a harsh word or to raise his hand against his child for fear of the child. These fears that we have, these terrors that we have of ourselves, are that which often keep us away from a bit of mysterious nefesh, throwing ourselves into the furnace. Doesn't matter, it's more important. The Mialdis, Shifra and Pur find themselves in a situation where they've got to be Moshe Nefesh, they've got to give their lives, possibly, for an act of chesed. Where do they learn that from? From their father, Avraham Avinu. Not just chesed, but chesed motivated by Yiro Shamayim. There's a very big difference between chesed motivated by humanism and chesed motivated by Yiro Shamayim. Chesed motivated by humanism is politics. It's expedience. That means I believe that society must be good to one another to make the world a more pleasant place to live in. And therefore, I will be good to other people. But what happens when my goodness to other people is going to lead to my own downfall? For example, the case of the Chazon Ish. He's opening a shop across the road from me. Yes, I believe that the world should be a good place to live in and people should help one another, but there's a limit. Must I help my enemy? Must I help the thief who comes to break into my house? Must I show him around and open the cupboards for him? Is that what I have to do? And so one justifies that in these situations, chesed is not required. Why? Because I'm scared. Who am I scared of? Him, my competitor. One cannot perform acts of chesed and one is scared. For chesed, one needs fearlessness. For true chesed, for pure chesed, one needs fearlessness. And that fearlessness comes from fearing the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no other way one can cultivate fearlessness. We learnt last week that Yiras Hashem Tehoiro Emedes Lohad. Yiras Shemaim is the purification process. Yiras Shemaim can take something grob and make of it something fine. Yiras Shemaim can take something rough and make out of it something polished. We're talking about a man who does chesed, not a man who doesn't do chesed. He does. The only problem is the refinements aren't there. When that chesed is a threat to his own health and to his own well-being, then he can't do it. For that he needs the purification. For that he needs Yiras Shemaim. You have a man who's able to learn, who's able to set aside time to learn. But when his learning comes into conflict with other things, then comes the fears. What will happen to my business if I learn a little bit more? What will happen to my family? What will happen to my marriage? What is my wife going to say about it? What are my children going to say about it? Of course, these things have to be balanced off. It's not so simple. But very often, it's not a balancing off process. Very often, it's plain and simple fear. I'm scared of the consequences of throwing myself into something that requires great koches, that requires great energy and great effort. Fear of the consequences to my own health, to my own wealth, to my family. That's how the Chazon Ish finishes off. That an individual who helps his competitor, kama min hakedusha moses bo ilam, how much holiness does he add into the world? That's where you see kedusha. All the mitzvahs are terribly important. All the aveiros that we mustn't do are terribly important. That we must preserve standards of Shmiras Shabbos, that we must preserve standards of kashrus, that we must preserve standards of taras hamishpocha. All of this is terribly important. But to increase the level of kedusha in the world, there's nothing that can have the effect of a frum businessman helping his competitor. There you see kedusha in operation. There you see the Torah functioning and working. Until you see that, you haven't seen Torah. Until one's seen that, one's seen, one can call it all sorts of funny names, one doesn't know what it is. Obsessions, compulsiveness, religion, call it what you want, but not Torah. To see Torah in operation, you have to see fearlessness in operation. And where there's fearlessness, there's kedusha. Not fearlessness because one's unable to feel fear, because one's a little insane. Fearlessness because one is very scared, but one's fear is directed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Liros ish oise chesed im hamisate v'dizcharosim. To see a man doing kindness with one who sets himself up in competition. Moisif tehilo lireo v'isborach. And that adds praise, says the Chazon Ish, lireyov, to those who fear God. The Chazon Ish also sees in this man an aspect of Yiras Hashem. This is a God-fearing man, not a moral man, not an ethical man, not a kind man, not a chosid. That's not what he calls him. A Yoreh Shemayim, this is what it means. This is the test of Yiras Shemayim. This is where you can see where you fear God or you fear human beings. Are you scared of your competition or are you scared of the Ribbono Shel Olam? The Ribbono Shel Olam says help him. Business says don't help him. Who do you believe it's in whose hands is your welfare? In the economists or in the Ribbono Shel Olam? Here we'll see if you're a religious human being or if you're just a compulsive, scared person who instead of being scared of people or in addition to being scared of people are also scared of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Chovas HaVovas call that Shituf, that's already Avodah Zorah. A man who's scared of God and others. He wants to play it safe. Who knows? God can harm me, but so can people. So I'll keep on the right side of everyone. That doesn't work. Can't keep on the right side of everyone. One has to make a choice. And if the choice is God and others, that's not Yiras Shemayim. That's idolatry. And in fact, the Chovas HaVovas says it's a lot worse than idolatry. For many reasons. Idolaters, he says, only serve one God, one strange God, or two, or three, or five. But these people, it's limitless the number of gods they've got. Whoever they believe can do them good or harm becomes a god. He calls these people flatterers. because it will inevitably lead them to flattery. Those that believe in idolatry don't fool the world. Everybody knows that idol worshippers, and they keep away from them. But these people look religious, they look frum, and people trust them and confide in them, not realizing that they're just idolaters, that they believe in many gods, and that they will flatter, and that they will lie, and that they will cheat, as long as they make sure that they're in safe hands. The test of Yiras Shamayim is not in the degree to which one fears the Ribbono Shel Olam. Any psychotic individual can fear the Ribbono Shel Olam. The test of Yiras Shamayim is the degree to which I fear none other but the Ribbono Shel Olam. That tests frumkeit. And that's out in the marketplace. That's where you see it being tested. In fact, this entire shir is in this week's Sedra. One doesn't even have to look at Rashi or anything. It's right in the Psukim. Several times the term V'yoresa Me'ilekecha is mentioned in the Sedra. First time, V'loi Seinu Ish Esamise. Do not oppress your friend. V'yoresa Me'ilekecha. And you shall fear the Ribbono Shel Olam. Rashi explains the oppression of one's friend in this case. Sometimes one is asked to give advice in matters which have no bearing on one's own interests at all. Then it's relatively easy to analyze and to consider carefully and to give advice to the best of one's ability. But sometimes one is asked to give advice in areas which do affect one's own interests. And here there is a tendency to give advice, or the possibility to give advice she'eino hoigenes lo, not bad advice, simply advice which is not suitable to him. It's good advice to somebody else, it would be good advice, but to him it's not suited, because it's in the system and the to the benefit of the yoyetz, of the one who's giving the advice. An individual comes and he wants to know what to do with himself. He's finishing school, he's finishing university, he's got a few years he would like to spend. Or go to yeshiva, I would say. What yeshiva should he go to? And I'd give him the name of a yeshiva in which I have an interest. Not a bad piece of advice. He'll probably do okay there. But it's not the yeshiva most suited to his own individuality, to his own personality. That's an issa d'oraisa. Lo'tinu issa samisa. You're pushing him into a mold which you're creating. You're not advising him in accordance with his own mold. You're making the mold and you're pushing him into it. For your own interests, not for his benefit. That's leitoinu ishe samise. How does one stop oneself doing that? For your reisa me'lekech. You've got to know the Ribbono Shel Olam is watching. It's only when there's a fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam, when you know for this you'll be punished, taking it on its most primitive level. As I've said many times, we will take Yiras Shamayim onto higher levels later on, but we're not even holding at this level yet. Only when one's aware and conscious that for this I lose Olam Haba, for these words, for advising a person to go to a yeshiva, and a good yeshiva, it just happens not to be in the best interests of the individual, and I could have and should have known that. That's an issa d'oraisa for which I lose Olam Haba. When I have that fear, when it's, I sit there, as Chazal say, with a sword dangling over my head, as I'm deciding where to advise him to go, then it's possible to come out right. But as long as I'm afraid that if I don't send him, that if I don't send him to the yeshiva in which I have an interest, maybe that yeshiva will suffer, maybe it will cease to exist, I don't have enough talmidim, who do I fear? The Ribbono Shel Olam, or the natural consequences that take place in the world? The second occasion in which it's mentioned is in the laws of lending money. Al tikach meitu neshech v'sarbis v'yoreso me'lokecho v'cheo chicho imach. When you find your friend is battling and is about to collapse financially, you shall hold him up. Lend him money without interest. How does a person lend money without interest? That's very hard. So hard that today it's hardly done. Yes, you have gemachs. Gemach is a very fine thing where an individual donates money to the Gemach and the Gemach lends it without interest. Why does it work that way? For two reasons. Number one, to have the combined effect of a large number of people rather than individual effect. Number two, because we find that it's easier to give charity than to lend money without interest. Go to a big balabos and say, you know, I would like you to give 10,000 rand interest free for a year. 5 years. Whatever it will be. It's going to cost you a total of 5,000 rand or whatever. He says, you know, do me a favor. Take 5,000 rand as a donation and leave me alone. I'll lend my money where I can get an interest rate. Take the 5,000 rand. People find it easier, although it's the same thing. People will find it easier to give than to lend without interest. That goes against the grain. To take my money, which I could be earning interest on, and lend it to somebody else that he earns the interest that I should be earning, that we find very difficult to do. It means helping a person in a way which is against my own interests. For that you need Yerushalayim. Without Yerushalayim it's not going to work. And the third case is in the case of a Jewish slave. They were told again, don't work him, Unculus learns too hard. Don't afflict him, don't work him to breaking point. Why not? He's my slave, I'm paying for him. Aren't I entitled to an honest day's work? Yeah, but there's porech, there's an honest day's work and it's going too far. But he's my slave, I'm paying for every minute that he works. Don't worry. Where do you think your money's coming from? From him? From the work he does or from the Ribbono Shel Olam? Who are you scared of? Are you scared of your creditors or are you scared of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Here we have three cases in this week's Sedra. All of them where we are required to help others at great cost to ourselves. And the advice on how to achieve it is V'yoreisa Me'ilakech. Without Yerushalayim you can't do it. There are people that say it is possible to be moral without being religious. It depends what they mean by moral and it depends what they mean by religious. If they call religion what we have called religion up till now, then they are quite right. You can be moral without keeping Shabbos, and you can be moral without keeping kashrus, and you can be moral without keeping the whole Torah. If they call morality what we have called morality up till now, then they are also quite right. But if they call morality what the Torah calls morality, if they call morality putting one's own life on the line for one's competitors, if that's what morality is, and if religion means Yerushalayim, primitive basic fear of God as the lowest level of religion, then they're wrong. There is no way a human being can achieve morality in these terms without religion in these terms. Chesed, pure chesed, cannot be achieved without Yiras Elokim. In Yiras Elokim, where there's true fear of God, there will also be true fearlessness of man. And where there's fearlessness of man, that can be the real form of that which the Torah calls chesed.